Welcome to the Time We Have podcast, presented to you by Motor Neuron Disease, New South Wales. MND New South Wales acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land we live on. We pay our respects to all elders, past and present, of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nations.
Basically, we had a washing up bowl on the floor and she'd stand in that and I'd wash her just with a, you know, I'd say a flannel.
Hello and a very warm welcome to the MND New South Wales podcast, The Time We Have. My name is Sabine Krajewski. I'm part of the education team at Motor Neuron Disease New South Wales. And my guest today is Sue Fowler, who grew up in the UK and came to Australia in 1980. Sue lost both her parents early, her mother to motor neuron disease. She always had a keen interest in health and the body, and she is currently living and working in Newcastle. Welcome, Sue.
Hello.
You're in Newcastle. Draw us in a little bit. Where are you? Are you at home? Where are you sitting? What do you see?
I'm sitting at home looking out at a lovely blue sky. It's a lovely sunny day. It's actually warmer outside than it is in my home. I've been out most of the morning doing physical stuff. So,
oh, that sounds good.
I have to sit down and rest.
Yeah, that's good. I think I'm going to do that later. I have been sitting at my desk. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I said you are in Newcastle and that's where you live, but you grew up in the UK. So how did you get to live in Australia?
So I went to a party and with my boyfriend at the time, who said he was actually coming to Australia for a holiday. Mm-hmm. That was in 1978. And so I asked him if I could come with him. And so he wrote to his godparents and they said, yes, that was fine. So first of all, I came for a three-month holiday, which was based in Western Australia. And we both fell in love with Australia and decided we wanted to come back and live here. There was a lot of hoops to jump through to get back. And basically, he had to have a job. Right. I then had to marry him because I didn't have a job that was required. I was just a
on the secretary. List. They have those lists then as well.
Yeah, so they have lists of desired professions. He was a quantity surveyor and they were in short supply apparently. So we got married in June 1980 and actually emigrated on Boxing Day 1980. So lived in Perth for 13 years and then moved over to New South Wales. Got divorced before that. Met my second husband in New South Wales and stayed here. So that's how I came to be here.
Cool, that sums it up. But you then also started to work and you work in health, right?
Yeah, so I've always been a secretary since I left school. Basically, I did a two-year secretarial course. Then I got a job just in the sales company. And in about 1984, I think it was, I did my medical secretarial certificate and started in with a cardiologist straight away after I finished that. And basically, apart from a short two-year stint when I went back to general secretarial work, I've been in the medical field ever since.
Right.
I love all the long words.
But you always worked that whole time you worked in, you lived in Australia. You never moved back to the UK.
No, I've never moved back, you know.
How was it? I mean, today, after COVID, at least you can fly back and forth. But at that time, were you able to go and travel a lot or?
Yes, I have. I've been back to England several times for holidays. I've always tried to not just go back to England because the place I'm from is not particularly exciting.
Okay.
So the England part's always been just to catch up with family. Then I try and work in another country or something else as well. So, yeah, that's how I've done it.
Whereabouts did you grow up in the UK?
So in a place called Stoke-on-Trent where they make pottery, or they used to make the pottery, Dalton and Wedgwood pottery.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, most of my family either worked in the steel industry or in the pottery.
Okay, so, I have heard of Stoke-on-Trent. I don't think I've been there though. You told me that when you grew up, you have a brother and you lost your father very early. So he died from a brain tumor when you were?
Yeah, he died when I was 12, just before my 13th birthday, actually.
Yeah.
And my brother was, I was 12, my brother was 10, and my mum was 36.
Yeah.
And she basically, she brought us up from then on her own.
Yeah.
Which at the time you don't appreciate, but now I look back, I think, wow, you know, what an amazing thing to do.
Yeah, definitely.
From such a young age. You know, you sort of don't
get
on with things later. When you're a kid, but then when you look back as an adult, you think, well, that's pretty amazing. So
yeah, definitely. Mm. Tell me more about your mother. Like, what was she like and what did she do? She worked in the pottery?
Yeah, so she, when I was younger, she worked as a gilder in the pottery industry, which is putting the gold leaf on cups and saucers and things like that. And it's done by hand, so it's just on a wheel, done by hand.
Yeah.
So very skilled.
Fancy stuff, not job. Just, yeah.
Yeah, but I always remember the awful smell of the gold when she used to come home, all the clothes and everything used to smell of this gold stuff.
Yeah.
And then in later years, she was a cleaner in schools and in hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
She actually came to Australia for a short time and was the same thing over here.
Okay.
She was, I've always seen her, she always seemed to be smiling. Everyone says I look very much like her. And she was a very vibrant woman. I don't consider myself to be that. Very strong, independent, but also very vulnerable, I think.
Yeah.
She actually had an affair after my father died.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that person took advantage of the fact that she was a very attractive woman and obviously probably very lonely at that age.
36.
Yeah. I mean, she never had another relationship after that, which is a shame because I know there was an old boyfriend that was on the scene at one stage and probably wanted to get back with her. But anyway, that didn't happen. And so, yeah, she never had a relationship again apart from... Mm.
And she was very involved with looking after her children, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess early on she didn't have time for anything else. But as an older person, she wasn't old when she died, but certainly I think she probably could have had a relationship. But anyway, that didn't happen.
So. Did you wish for that sometimes?
Yeah, I think it was. I just felt like it was a waste. You know, she was She was such an attractive, vibrant woman. To be on her own was a shame.
Mm. You learned that your mother had M&D when you were on a trip and you were traveling, and it sounds like an amazing trip. Can you talk a bit about that trip?
I've actually spent the weekend looking through old photographs trying to rekindle, you know, some memories. I mean, I obviously had vague memories, but I've had a nice trip down memory lane over the weekend.
Great. So, what this is useful for. Fantastic.
Yeah, so I actually went from Kathmandu to London. So I went back to England overland.
Yeah.
I was about 32 at that time. So it took 90 days. I left in the April and arrived in the June. And we basically went Bangkok, Kathmandu, India, Pakistan, Iran, Turkey.
Wow.
And then into Europe. Very briefly, the Europe part was just quick, but the other part was just an amazing trip.
Yeah.
Varied ages, went from like mid-20s up to mid-70s.
So it was an organized travel group.
So it was an organized trip with couriers, you know, people that knew what they were doing. It was just...
You flew to Bangkok and then...
Flew to Bangkok and then to Kathmandu. And then joined the trip from there, and then overland, just in it was basically a converted bus, a normal bus that had been, some of the seats were taken out, tables and chairs put in.
amazing, yeah.
Yeah, and it was an amazing trip.
Yeah.
So I'd rung Mum for her birthday in March, and she sounded slurry at that stage, and I said, "Have you been drinking?" And she said, "Yes." But she didn't tell me that she had motor neuron. And I guess because she didn't want to impact on my holiday.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until I actually got to Iran that I got a letter from her telling me that she had motor neuron, which I'd never heard of.
Yeah. How did she send you a letter?
Sorry, what was that?
How did she send
I think in those days when you were overseas, they used to have like points where you could get mail sent to.
Okay.
And they probably maybe still do that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Not right letters these days. Yep. But yeah, they used to have like a mailbox where you could say, oh, I'm going to be in this place at this time.
Yeah.
And so if you want to get in touch with me, you can send some mail to that point.
Yes. And I think you would probably just pull out your mobile phone, but I don't know if it would.
No, well, we didn't have mobile phones.
I know, but I'm just thinking what would happen today if they, because
well, you'd probably just email, I guess, or do a Skype or one of those things. But
we don't have that everywhere either, right? We're just so able to have the internet everywhere, but it depends on where you travel. So where you traveled, I suppose there were some quite remote places as well. Okay, so anyway, she sent you a letter.
So she sent me a letter and she said, I've got motor neuron disease, prepare yourself for a shock. And I don't remember much more information than that. So anyway, there was a nurse on the trip and she basically explained to me that what motor neuron was and sort of what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
That was, oh, I guess that was probably about May. And then I arrived in June and Mum and my brother and my sister-in-law met me at the bus station. And she'd basically turned into a little old lady who, you know, she'd gone from a very vibrant woman who, you know, loved bushwalking and all that stuff to a little old lady who could just about walk. So, and then she very rapidly deteriorated to not being able to walk, being in a wheelchair, and then not being able to feed herself. Mm-hmm. And so basically I became her carer for a very short time.
Okay.
And she died in the August. So.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
What did the nurse that was on the bus, actually, that was quite surprising that she knew about motor neuron disease.
I can't really remember what she told me, but.
Okay. But you knew it was serious and she would die.
I knew it was serious and that, you know, there was no sort of cure or whatever. So,
So she had known about her, Emily, but not told you, and that was to make sure you enjoy the trip regardless, right?
I think so.
Yeah, also shows what kind of person she was. So she was looking after you even in that situation. Yeah. When you arrived home, you told me before that you couldn't quite believe that she really had MND and you went for a second opinion.
Can you? Yeah, so I guess I was in denial. I was really angry. So I just didn't want to believe what the specialist said, so I organized a second opinion and we had to go to Birmingham for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember even that specialist, he just had no sort of compassion. He was no empathy, no sort of bedside manner, as they call it.
Was he a neurologist?
A neurologist, yeah.
Oh, he was, yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, he confirmed that, yes, she has motor neuron and there's no cure. And she, I mean, I don't know if he actually said she's going to die, but, you know, I think she knew because she'd actually worked on a neurology ward herself. So, she would have known what was going to happen, I guess.
Possibly, yeah. Okay.
Basically, then we just went home and I remember at one stage trying to organise a holiday. There was some group that did holidays for, not specifically motor neuron, but people with some sort of disability type thing, but that never actually happened.
Because she deteriorated
too quickly.
Rapidly, or? Yeah.
And I remember, you know, trying to source information. You know, in those days, you opened a phone book, you rang on a normal phone.
Yeah.
I mean, everything's so different now, but... there didn't seem to be a lot of support back then. So, and also because I wasn't familiar with the health system, I guess, in England anymore.
Right.
Maybe I would have it would have been different if I'd been here. But
yeah, that was 1990, was it?
Yeah, 1990.
Yeah, so yeah, difficult.
A long time ago.
a lot of things were not there that are there now. But there was a MND association already.
Yeah.
Did you know about them?
I honestly can't remember.
Okay, yeah, sure. But who supported your mom before you came?
Well, so I've tried to find that out over the weekend. I've emailed my brother again, but again, I haven't got an answer. And my sister-in-law couldn't really remember either. She was actually pregnant at the time. Her second child was born just before mum died.
Mm-hmm.
I think she possibly spent quite a bit of time with some relatives that used to live not that far away from her. I think maybe they used to pick her up and she'd spend the day with them, or they'd go out somewhere, you know. I think it was just because it was so rapid.
Yeah.
She was probably not that bad up until I got there in the June. So I think she was diagnosed around the January, maybe. Again, I haven't been able to find out specifically, but certainly when I rang her in March, she was slurry. And so I think, she spent quite a bit of time with Doris and Bernard. And
so they were more like friends and family.
Well, they were distant relatives.
Yeah.
Very complicated distant relatives. Yeah. So I'm not sure exactly specifically what relation they were. But
I'm thinking she must have still been working, right? So did she stop?
I don't think she was working at that stage.
Yeah. Okay. No,
but I think she was still capable of looking after herself. But they probably just, you know, spent time with her just
to make sure she was okay
and all that stuff.
So that probably also means she didn't have allied health team around her.
No, I don't remember
feeding the nutritionist, anything like that.
No, definitely not. None of that stuff.
Yeah.
No. And she was still able to eat normally when I first got there, but I ended up having to feed her and toilet her and do all that stuff.
Which is difficult if she didn't have, I suppose you didn't have any changes in the house, right? So she had to get in and out of a bathroom in a wheelchair is usually not.
No, well, the bathroom was upstairs. So there was a little cupboard storeroom in the kitchen downstairs. So we ended up getting a port-a-loo from somewhere. I can't remember where.
Yeah.
And so she'd go to the toilet there, and basically we had a washing up bowl on the floor, and she'd stand in that, and I'd wash her just with a flannel or a face cloth, whatever you call it in Australia.
I don't know what we call it actually.
So really, so because there wasn't much support, you had to improvise, right?
Just be creative around it.
I can't remember where the wheelchair came from, but she definitely had a wheelchair.
I was just going to ask, because you said she had a wheelchair.
Yeah, I guess that must have come from some support system, but in terms of actual people supporting, I don't remember anybody coming to the house or anything like that.
Yeah,
and you don't know who organized that for her,
if she did that herself or if one of the relatives.
The wheelchair?
Yeah.
No, I think I must have done that, because she wasn't in a wheelchair when I got there. She still could walk at that stage. So But I just can't remember where it came from. So.
And that was the only equipment she had?
From memory. I think I also organised one of those alert things that you hang around your neck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. From somewhere, and eventually we had to put a single bed downstairs because she couldn't get up the stairs anymore. But other than that, I don't remember any other, you know, eating tools or anything like that.
You said she then had to go to hospital, and she also died in hospital. Do you remember why?
She died in hospital. I think she got to the point where she couldn't swallow, probably having problems with her breathing.
So
she was in hospital
and not for long.
And then she actually, there was we weren't with her when she died. She we just got a call from the hospital in the morning to say that she'd died, and so the next time I saw her was basically just to, you know, go and say goodbye.
Were you able to speak to her openly about the disease and about
No, never did.
Okay.
Never really discussed it. I do remember, I don't know whether it's the English thing, but we never told each other we loved each other. But I had a boyfriend at the time, and he said to me, "Tell your mum you love her." So I did.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one and only time when I visited her in hospital that I told her I loved her.
Okay. Yeah.
I do remember her saying, it was really hard to understand what she was trying to say towards the end, but I do remember her saying she wanted to die. And I'm a very strong supporter of dying with dignity and all that stuff for that reason.
Yeah.
Because I just think it's such a cruel disease.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
She knew it. I mean, she told you that she loves you by not telling you, because she didn't want to ruin your trip, right? That's a way
I guess
of
so.
Yeah, definitely. So there, you seem to have had a loving relationship, and it affected you, or still affects you, I suppose.
Yeah.
You also have an idea of, or your own theory about, why she became ill. Can you talk to that?
Well, I mean, I don't know, but I just remember reading somewhere that some people have a theory that, you know, being around toxic substances can give you motor neuron.
Contribute to its development.
I just go back to that gold that she used, which would have been on her skin and it through her clothes and everything smelled of it. And I just always wonder whether that may have been something to do with it. But then you also mentioned the other day about bangs on the head. And I do remember she had a detached retina at one stage, but that was probably quite a long time before she actually came ill. So I don't know. Mm. But yeah, I just always wondered about the gold and the toxicity.
Yeah. How long did she work in that?
I mean, I honestly can't tell you exactly, but...
For years, so...
Probably... Well, I think that's where she was working when my dad died.
Right.
And certainly into my teenage years. So, I really don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know the cause for it's just interesting. But it's assumed that it is a mixture of environmental, genetic, lifestyle, all of that. So it's obviously a mixture of whatever is out there, right? But there are quite a few theories, and so far none of them, you know, there's nothing that where you can say that's definitely a contributor, except for some of the genetic contributors.
Yeah.
If it hadn't been the 90s, but a decade or two later, do you think you would have found better support for your mom, and maybe it would have been a different and possibly a bit longer journey?
I don't really know, because... I guess she had a pretty aggressive form of it. So, I mean, she wasn't on any medication. I guess there's some medications now that people can take.
Yeah, Riluzole that slow it down a little bit. 95. So that was too early for her.
Yeah. So maybe if she'd have been on some sort of medication that's available now, that might have slowed things down a bit. But
And if she'd had the support of a multidisciplinary team and good nutrition, that probably would have made a difference as well.
It also sounds a bit like she was really holding out until you arrived.
Well, also until the new baby arrived, because died.
Because those psychosocial factors do play a role as well.
Yeah. So my niece was born on the 30th of July and mum died on the 24th of August. Yeah. So maybe she was holding out till that happened.
You lost both your parents at a young age, and did that affect your own life, or how did it affect your own life? I'm sure it did.
I think it's made me a bit of a hard person, as in I find it hard to let people in, because I probably have this deep-seated belief that they'll leave me eventually.
Okay.
I've been married twice, and I probably don't let people get really close to me. I think it's made me a very unsettled. I've lived in a lot of different houses and different places. So I'm a bit of a wanderer, a bit of a restless soul. And I've also suffered from depression, and whether that's anything to do with, you know, my life history or not. But I've battled depression for quite a lot of my life.
I mean, even though it's a long time ago, but it's a long time ago and there was not much help around also for you as a carer. So, you know, it's very possible that that affected all those things that you just mentioned. I wanted to ask you about your brother.
Right.
If I imagine that you both, you know, lost your father early and then lost mom, did that bring you and your brother closer together?
No, not at all. It's interesting. I actually emailed my sister-in-law because I knew he probably wouldn't answer me.
Yeah.
And then I emailed her again. I mean, I do speak to him occasionally on the phone, but he's never been very communicative. And my sister-in-law said that she thinks he just doesn't want to revisit the past, that there's a lot of stuff that he hasn't dealt with, which I totally agree with, even though I wouldn't say I necessarily know him that well as a person anymore. But my take is that, well, I can't say he needs to, but I think it would be of benefit to him to address some of the stuff that's happened in his life. But I think
was he in the UK when your mother was ill? Like, did he?
Was yeah, he was still living. He still lives in the same area that we grew up in. So he's never gone very far. He's very, very totally opposite to me in every way possible. So he was sort of not far away, but
But so you would say that certainly it also had an impact on his life
Definitely.
Loses. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, I think he's in denial about that, really.
So I ask all my guests about what they find important to spend their time on. What do you do with the time you have, and what is important for you to spend time on?
I love to be outdoors, so I spend most of my time when I'm not at work, which is only one day a week now.
Okay.
So I bike ride a lot. So I bike ride 3 times a week. So that's a very social thing for me. That's my basically my social life these days.
Mm-hmm.
I go to sort of stretch classes and the gym. Just love to be out in nature, basically. If I can be outside, I'd be outside 24 hours a day. But sometimes it's a little bit cold.
Weather.
Yeah. And I think I get that. Well, my mum and my her dad were both very outdoorsy person.
Yeah.
My granddad used to take us fishing when I was a child. Mm-hmm. And the whole family would basically go apart from my dad. And he had allotments and all that. So I think I get my love of nature from him and from my mum. I guess friends are very important to me because I've never had children. And I don't know if what happened to me as a young child affected the fact that I didn't want children. But
you
I decided
okay.
I didn't want children.
Okay.
So, yeah, friends are very important.
It sounds good. And if you think about the cold, I mean, just think about if you had stayed in the UK, it's colder there. So you're actually fine. And
I couldn't stand it. when I go back there, I find it really hard because a lot of the time you can't go outside because it's raining or whatever.
Yeah, right. You can. And you just have to.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind being out in the rain here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm definitely need to be outdoors as much as I can.
Okay, proper Australian. So thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
MND New South Wales is funded largely by the generosity of community members, with only around 10 to 15% being received from government funding. If you'd like to donate, please go to www.mndnsw.org.au/donate or give MND New South Wales a call and one of our friendly staff will assist you. Check out our website for more information at www.mndnsw.org.au or call the MND New South Wales info line on 1800 777 175.